For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. China says all North Korean companies within its borders will have to close down as UN sanctions against Pyongyang are implemented. The vast majority of North Korea's trade is with China, which has already banned exports of textiles and some oil. It comes after Pyongyang's sixth nuclear test. US President Donald Trump has waived shipping restrictions so fuel and other supplies can get to Puerto Rico, which was devastated by Hurricane Maria. The federal government's been criticized over its response for the US territory. The fourth round of Brexit talks has wrapped in Brussels, with both sides saying progress has been made. But EU negotiators say still not enough progress has been made for the two sides to begin talks on a new trade relationship. Kevin Ozebeck reports from Brussels.
EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier says it has been a constructive week. But despite the advancements made in negotiations, he says progress isn't sufficient enough to begin talking trade.
We fail to agree that the European Court of Justice must play an indispensable role in ensuring this consistency. This is a stumbling block for the EU. There are others.
Three key issues still need to be hammered out. There are the rights of EU citizens in the UK and vice versa, what to do with the Northern Irish border, and how much money the UK will owe the EU. On the so-called Brexit bill, the UK still has not given the EU a precise figure on how much it's willing to pay. Last week, as Prime Minister Theresa May laid out her Brexit plan, she said no EU country should pay a penny more or less for the UK's exit up until 2020. Though that still leaves in question how the EU will pay the pensions of UK citizens who worked for its institutions. Kevin Ozebeck, Brussels.
British police say children should be taught in schools how to respond if they're caught up in a terrorist attack. It comes after a spate of incidents in 2017 in the UK, including at a pop concert in Manchester, attended by many children. The Met Police's Lucy Dorsey is also warning children and adults alike to flee attacks rather than try and film them with smartphones.
We want you to run away from danger, hide if you can't run, and then certainly make sure that you tell somebody. We don't want you to hang around in an area where it is dangerous to record the incident.
Customs in Mumbai have seized 38 kilograms of gold hidden in a shipping container among women's shoes. It's being described as one of the biggest gold confiscations in the past two decades in the city. From Mumbai, Rebecca Bundon.
The gold, worth about $1.6 million, was seized by customs at the Indira docks in Mumbai, the Times of India newspaper reports. The importer had declared the goods in the container as ladies' shoes from Thailand. An official told the newspaper that on investigation, customs found 38 bars of gold concealed inside the shoes. Rebecca Bundon, Mumbai.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and a warm welcome to the programme to you. Hope you're well this Thursday. Hope you've had a good old day. I've had better days. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Welcome to Your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. It's the 28th of September, 2017. Thanks for joining me.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And later on in the program, the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, Paul Craig Roberts, joins me, and we'll be discussing the following. Is identity politics brewing a Holocaust? Has Washington initiated military conflict with Russia? And we'll be also talking about how the United States became a warmongering police state. Terrific articles of late on paulcraigroberts.org. Paul joins me a little bit later on in the program. We are live on davidicke.com, the brand new and terrifically upgraded, redeveloped website, davidicke.com. Do check it out, do bookmark it. They've overhauled the website, it looks marvellous. It really does. Bookmark it and follow the news stories uploaded there daily on almost a minute-by-minute coverage of what's going on around the world on the brand spanking new davidicke.com. We're live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and, of course, richieallen.co.uk. Many thousands, this is true, by the way, we discovered this recently, many thousands of people listen to the programme via TuneIn Radio. And we didn't know this, we got very excited. It's one of those things about how listenership is measured in metadata. When we get our metadata coming into the programme about who's listening to us, we don't get the numbers of people who listen through TuneIn, because they take the stream, they replicate it, they do their own thing with it. And there could be a million people listening on TuneIn. There isn't, by the way. There isn't a million people or anything like it. But to us, it would look like one listener. But thousands are actually tuning in through TuneIn Radio on a daily basis as well. So it's good to have that access. It really is. I've had a bad old day. It's one of those days, you know. You know, there are people in the world and they have bad days. And bad days really do mean bad days. But I was out and about this morning. Today was a kind of a driving day. I don't drive every day, but today was a driving day. You can probably tell where this is going. So I drove out this morning to do a little bit of shopping, drove back. Then I had to drive to go and see somebody. Did that, drove back. And then I was looking at Jazz, our dog, and I thought, I won't take you on the regular walk because I get this idea that she might get bored of the same walks all the time. So I said to her, hop in the back of the car and I'll drive you around the corner to a big old park, a couple of miles away. Anyway, I'm driving out of the drive and I'm a very careful driver. I'm very fastidious about, you know, care and attention. And I will say I'm a bit tired and a bit distracted. I'm looking at the footpath ahead of me as I come out of the drive. There's nobody there. It's very quiet, really quiet street. But I'm looking in the rearview mirror at Jazz. And as I'm leaving the drive, I got distracted and turned a little bit too early. So the rear passenger door, the rear wheel above that, I scratched it up. And if you think your presenter is capable of the occasional bit of Tourette's on this programme, you should have heard me. Jazz put her paws over her ears. I absolutely... So I stopped and I got out and I thought, right, knowing your look, it's going to be pretty bad. It isn't bad, but it's a nuisance. Scratched up just above the back wheel near the passenger side of the car. And yeah, I was pretty pissed off about that because I am pretty careful. I'm not one of these blokes who boasts about his driving skills, you know. But I've never had an accident in many years of driving. I've never bumped into anything. Honest to God, I never have done. But today... aged 42, I scratched above the passenger side rear wheel and I mightily pissed off about it. I immediately phoned somebody and said, I want it dealt with. I want you to fix it for me. It's not going to be that expensive at all, but I've got a bit of OCD, so I can't look at it. So I can't wait to get it done. So I'm not in the best of form. Well, I am now. I think I've gotten it off my chest. I think when you talk about it, you feel that bit better about it. So yeah, first time for everything, I suppose. There you go. It's an old Ford Focus estate that I drive. You know, I'm not driving a Jaguar or a Mercedes or anything like that. Would that I were, though. I'd love to have a Mercedes or a Jaguar. No, I'm driving a practical Ford Focus estate, but anyway, there you are. Enough about the car, Richie. Get on with the show. On with the show. Now, decisive steps forward have been made in the latest round of UK-EU talks, and that's according to the Brexit Secretary, David Davis. That's what he said. But his counterpart, Michel Barnier, of the EU, he said, well, no, there are still very big gaps, and it could be weeks or months before we actually move to the next stage of talks about future relations between the EU and the UK. Delay, 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 delay. They did a press conference today. They've had another few days in the latest round of talks, as we just said. The BBC reports that the UK wants to start talking about the trading relationship it will have in the future with the European Union. But the EU says those talks can only begin if we get progress on three issues, namely the divorce bill. Piss off with your divorce bill, billions they want for leaving. Nonsense. The divorce bill is one. The rights for EU citizens in the UK and UK citizens in the EU. And also, thirdly, the Northern Ireland border. So what was interesting about today was there was a joint statement issued by two diametrically opposed groups. Who are they, you cry? Well, trade union group, the TUC, the Trade Union Congress, and the CBI, which represents British businesses. They came together and called for urgent action from the EU and the UK government to guarantee citizens' rights. Have a listen to Frances O'Grady. She's the president of the Trade Union Congress, explaining why they've gone to bat with the CBI, the business group, and why it's so important, in her opinion, that this issue of the rights of EU citizens in the UK is dealt with quickly. Now, this is a long clip. It's over 2 minutes long, but it's very interesting and it's worthwhile paying attention to. Trade Union Congress President Frances O'Grady speaking today with Sky News.
Well, I don't think this is an old-fashioned issue of politics or bargaining chips. I think this is about human decency. There are millions of people who are worried about their future. Britons in the rest of the EU and EU citizens here in Britain. And they've been waiting for 15 months. They've got families, they've got jobs, they've got homes. They want some security. So we're calling on the UK government and the EU to give that cast iron guarantee of their right to remain.
Who's this aimed at more, the EU27 or David Davis? Who do you think's digging in their heels more?
I've been concerned by government ministers talking about nothing's agreed until it's all agreed. Well, now that the UK government is looking for a 2-year extension of negotiations, that could leave millions of people in limbo for years. So we're really asking for some urgency on this issue, to get your act together, to do the right thing and guarantee that right to remain and give some peace of mind to families.
Theresa May said back in June that she wants EU citizens living here to stay. She announced proposals, said that, you know, resident for 5 years, you'll be able to apply for settled status. Those who come after as an unagreed date, I appreciate that, will have 2 years to apply for settled status. And we haven't had any acknowledgement of that from the EU side. So there seems to be an offer there on the table from the British government.
Well, there are lots of families left with some very big questions about what will happen to them, whether they will have the right for their families to stay with them, at what point they will have to apply for status and so on. And of course, we've also had some very high profile recent examples of the Home Office getting it wrong with people who already have settled status here being told to go home. So I don't think there's a lot of confidence amongst ordinary working people.
What Frances O'Grady did there was avoid the very good question asked by the pretty decent Sky News presenter. He said, hasn't the UK government already made an offer to the EU which would settle this and assuage the fears of the European Union citizens in the UK? She just ignored it. It goes on. It's worth listening to the rest of this.
Ordinary working people, that the government can sort this, but they need to. They need to do it quickly. They need to stop talking about people as if they're playing a game of poker and instead recognise that we're talking about real people. And often people, by the way, who are working in our NHS and public services. I mean, 10% of our registered doctors are EU citizens, 4% of nurses. At a time when we're struggling to recruit and retain professional staff, it seems to me that it should be in the government's own interest to get this sorted quickly.
And the 2-year implementation period that she's blaming the government for, now there's a lot to blame politicians for, and I have no truck with any of them, but that 2-year period has been inflicted on the government by the Bank of England, by UK business, by UK MPs, parliamentarians, by the ridiculous negotiating position or stance of the European Union. It isn't the position of David Davis, or at least they didn't propose this idea that we wouldn't leave in 2019, that we would stick around for another few years while we all get used to the new arrangement. So here's the Lib Dem leader, Vince Cable, and his take on what you heard from Francis O'Grady. This is Vince Cable, staunch Remainer.
Well, I think if I were in her position, I think what I would be trying to do is to take out of these negotiations all of the issues around European nationals in the UK and British nationals in Europe. It's completely counterproductive using these people as hostages. What's happening is large numbers of them are now leaving the UK, creating big problems for the health service and some of our key industries. So take them out of the negotiations, accept that they have a right to stay.
But why would Theresa May take that issue out of the negotiations immediately? I'll tell you why. I'm not backtracking on what I've said. I firmly believe they should leave those citizens here who are paying taxes, working, have lived here, leave them alone, and vice versa in Europe. I really do believe that. But there are more EU citizens in the UK than there are UK citizens in Europe. Now, obviously, you want to guarantee the rights of your own citizens in Europe, but you want something in return, right? And I've never really had much experience with negotiating anything, really, apart from a bit of haggling here and there in the market. But other than that, I don't have. But I'm guessing the best way to negotiate is just not to give people what they want without getting something in return. Now, there are 3.6 million citizens living in the UK who are actually from another country in the EU. So 3.6 million EU citizens living here. And there are 1.2 million UK folks living in Europe. Now, we've mentioned this figure before. So you don't have to be Einstein to realise that's a pretty big headache for the European Union. It's much more of an issue for them than it is for the UK negotiating team. So why would you just give it to them? Oh, yeah, okay, we'll guarantee the rights of all those EU citizens. Why would you do that? You know, what happened to quid pro quo? You give something, we give something. You get something, we get something in return. Now, Vince Cable is not too bright, but what's new about that? Look, we saw Donald Tusk this week, the EU Council President. You saw him outside Downing Street with Theresa May, positively threatening the UK again, but at the same time saying that negotiations can't advance. This is all about delay, 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 delay. The longer they delay, obviously, by nature of the fact they are delaying, we move further away from the point of June 23rd last year when people said enough is enough. And the further you get away from that, the easier it is to convince people that the mood of the nation has changed, even though it hasn't. 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Good news for the beleaguered, oppressed Palestinians today. There aren't many people more oppressed or beleaguered than the Palestinians. Interpol, which you might know, I'm sure you do, is the international police organisation, and it exists to promote cooperation between international police forces. What has Interpol done? You might know this already. It's agreed to Palestine becoming a member. So Palestine will be a member of Interpol. Pretty good. At their General Assembly in Beijing, the majority of Interpol members backed the move to bring in Palestine. But Israel is not happy. But then again, when is she ever happy? This is RT with the report. This is some good news.
Israel is threatening retaliation after Interpol voted to accept Palestine as a state member. The Israel Prime Minister even accused the Palestinian leadership of hindering any chance of peace in the troubled region.
This attempt is part of an ongoing Palestinian campaign to continue the conflict with Israel inside professional international bodies in a way that disrupts these bodies' work. The Palestinian diplomatic warfare will not go unanswered.
Interpol joins a long list of international organizations to recognize Palestine's statehood. The territory declared independence in November 1988 and was recognized by dozens of countries, including every Arab state, the Soviet Union, and its allies. More states followed suit over the next two decades. A breakthrough for Palestine came in 2011 when it was accepted to UNESCO. A year later, even more significantly, the UN General Assembly upgraded Palestine to a non-member state.
Right, RT with the report there. So the Palestinians are happy about this, of course. The Israelis, as you heard there, are saying that Palestine wants to use its membership of such organisations to commit to or to carry on its antipathy, its hostility and its terrorism towards Israel. Monumental bollocks. Here's Hanan Ashrawi from the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah. She's obviously pretty happy about the news.
This is a clear message to the rest of the world that Palestine is a member of this international community, believes firmly in the laws that govern the behavior of civilized nations. It tells the Israelis that we are not just population centers at the mercy of Israel, but that we are a nation and a state with full rights and with full obligations.
Yes, pretty happy she is, pretty happy. However, there are some stark warnings as to what the Palestinians might expect. Amir Oren is a geopolitical analyst, and he said Israel is nervous because Israel can now be reported by the Palestinians for what it does in Gaza. Here's Amir Oren with a stark warning for Palestine and the Palestinian Authority.
More and more international organizations and more countries do recognize it. So inevitably, once it negotiates with Israel the definition of its statehood and the delineation of its borders, it will be a state. And being a member of Interpol is another symbolic step. But there is also the substantial step of being part of a law enforcement organization, which would entitle Palestine to get intelligence and other material, and also issue international search warrants, and could try to apprehend Israeli officials for alleged war crimes. Israel, of course, vehemently resists such a motion. Israel doesn't want to upset the delicate balance even more. So it wouldn't do Israel any good to punish the Palestinian Authority.
Yes, the Israelis are not happy at all. Here is the Israeli PM, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, speaking a short time ago. Made me laugh. Right. The Israelis are not happy. Seriously, though, I was thinking today, and I've not got the crystal ball out, and I don't take this lightly at all. If I was in Palestine, if I was in Gaza right now, I would think pretty hard about the fact that the Israelis might just use a false flag operation to justify another invasion of Gaza. I was thinking a lot about this today, because the Israelis would love nothing more now than an excuse to bomb Gaza again. Think about that in light of this decision by Interpol. You know, I hate even saying it. We might get news later in the week, next week, maybe even next month, that some young Israeli teenagers were kidnapped and murdered by suspected Hamas operatives. And before you know it, the planes are flying over Gaza again. That's the sort of thing you're dealing with. So we get excited when various international authority organizations recognize Palestine. We think this is good stuff, more pressure being brought to bear on Israel, but Israel can react however it wants to react, and it could be absolutely devastating for Gaza. So just think about that. 23 minutes past the hour. Going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about gender reassignment surgery. It's a very interesting story that's been covered all week long on davidicke.com. In fact, on the Dot Connector videocast, David and I spoke a little bit about this morning. Going to talk about gender reassignment surgery when we come back. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show, live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and my own website as well, richieallen.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
26 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show live on davidicke.com. This is a brand new davidicke.com. And Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, Charlotte says, exactly what I was thinking, Richie. Expect false flag crimes at the hands of the Palestinians. And then the claim that Palestine isn't fit to be a state, presumably because you can only use 140 characters. Charlotte is going to finish that by saying, and then Israel can storm Gaza again, as it's done before. Gojira says, Interpol set up by the House of Rothschild in Vienna in 1923. Hi to Faisal. Scrolling on down, Yvonne says, Richie, thank you and the people from Regret. Well, don't thank me at all. Today, my daughter came home with a consent form for the Gardasil vaccine, telling me she won't get cancer, thanks even to your information. We ripped the form up and threw it in the bin. I will try to inform other parents here, but sadly, there isn't much info in German. Yvonne, of course, came on this programme before during one of the phone-ins. Really interesting Irish lady living in Austria. Her daughter came home with the consent form. They ripped it up. They won't be giving their consent. I do have news on Gardasil that I was sent by my friend and colleague Jean-Anne Crowley. Very interesting news. There's an article in the Irish Independent. I'll come to that in about 10 minutes' time. Some really interesting news there. Thanks for that, Yvonne. Now, I mentioned just before the old break there that davidicke.com has been following a story this week about James Caspian. I've invited James Caspian to come on this programme. I'm not sure he's gotten the email. I haven't heard from him yet. He's a psychotherapist working at Bath Spa University. And he was researching the reversal of gender reassignment surgery. That's often called detransition. That's what he was doing, right? Right? Now, he was looking into it, was Caspian, because increasing amounts of people who've had gender reassignment surgery claim to regret it. Caspian, the psychotherapist, explains all of this to RT. Very interesting this.
Well, in 2014, I was in conversation with a colleague, a surgeon who does a lot of gender reassignment surgery. And he told me that in the previous year, he'd done 7 reverse gender reassignment operations and that he had never done that many before. And he was quite astounded that the number had gone up so much. Just to be clear, that means people who had had gender reassignment, they were all natal males who had transitioned to female, and they had had genital surgery and then regretted it and then gone to the doctor to ask for phalloplasty operations to try to reverse the surgery, which, of course, one can't really reverse. It's simply that he was trying to provide a cosmetic replacement for what they'd lost. And so I decided that I'd like to research this because I think it's very important that we try to understand what's been happening with these people and what their experiences are.
James Caspian speaking to RT. All very good, and he sounds like he's got integrity. But even Bath Spa University said it was politically incorrect. This is what they have said. His study is politically incorrect. A lot of men and women who've had gender reassignment surgery say they wish they hadn't had it done. Now, that's none of my business. It's their business, right? But they've been expressing this to him. He's studying it. But Bath Spa University says it's politically incorrect. So what does he think about them saying it's politically incorrect?
I was astonished at the university's position. I'd already done more than 18 months preliminary research. I'd put a proposal in to do research into people reversing surgery, which had been approved. I then changed my proposal slightly to include people who'd reversed gender transition without necessarily reversing the surgery. This was because in the interim, I'd been contacted by a group of young women in the United States who told me that they had reversed their gender transitions, but they didn't reverse their surgery. In their case, their surgery had been double mastectomy, having their breasts removed. They'd reversed their transitions, not the surgery, and they wanted me to know that. And I decided I wanted to research their situation as well, especially since I was discovering on my preliminary research that there appears to be a lot more of these people, to the point that last year they actually had a conference in the United States.
Okay, and just briefly then, you're finding that these people therefore need help. And in what way could your research help people?
I think, first of all, to help people, you need to have understanding and insight into what's happened to them, into what's been going on. I think that to help people, you need to be able to discuss things, even if some of those things might be uncomfortable for some people. I think that it's a hallmark of a democratic society that we're able to discuss things, even if we think they're uncomfortable. So I think first and foremost, I wanted their voices to be heard. I think a lot of them felt that simply by speaking and being listened to, that in itself would go some way towards some measure of healing. And then, of course, I wanted to bring this research to my field.
Yeah, but he can't bring it to his field now. He said there, we should be able to talk about things even if they make us uncomfortable. Did he not get the fucking memo? Unless the progressive Twitterati say it's okay to talk about it, you can't talk about it, James. So take all your documentation now, all your files, all your pots and your pans, as the late great Brian Clough said, and put them all in the bin, because it's politically incorrect to listen to men and women who regret their gender reassignment surgery. Now, there are obviously very many men and women who don't regret their gender reassignment surgery. That's not the issue. Why couldn't you hear from those who do? Why? Because the agenda is to get people gender confused. His findings don't fit the agenda. Therefore, he has to be discredited. It's labelled politically incorrect. And an academic study proposed by a qualified man is consigned to the dustbin. It's a mad world. 27 minutes to the top of the hour. Big thanks to Jean-Anne Crowley for this, the actress and a great friend of mine and big supporter of ours, who was in Cleggan this evening, cooking while listening to this, doing a favour for a neighbour, which doesn't surprise me. She sent me this article today, and then she went one further and she contacted the person involved. I'll tell you about that in a minute. The Irish Independent published a piece today. The headline is, Can We Not Do Better than throwing condoms at young boys and the HPV vaccine at young girls. Bishop claims cervical cancer vaccine only 70% safe. I'll read you some of the article now, bear with me. Listen up. This is the piece. Who's it written by again? Catherine Devine. Now, there's nothing celestial about her writing, by the way. Boom, boom. Nothing at all. She's a typical mainstream journalist. Listen to this. A Catholic bishop has come under fire for claiming the HPV cervical cancer vaccine is only 70% safe. Bishop Fonsy Cullinan, Bishop of Waterford and Lismore, told independent.ie that he has serious concerns about the HPV vaccine. Bishop Cullinan claims the vaccine offers, quote, no absolute guarantee of, quote, full protection against cervical cancer. He added, it is a lifestyle issue and that we should be doing more to protect young girls. A lifestyle issue. Now, my friend and colleague Jean-Anne Crowley, last time Anna Cannon was on the programme, made this essential point. It is a lifestyle issue. It is imagining that the young women of Ireland, as soon as they are old enough to know about sex, are running around the nightclubs and the bars of the city, pulling their knickers up and down like an elevator. That's what it is, right? It's madness. He said we should be doing more to protect young girls. Bishop Cullinan said, we're giving 12-year-olds an injection against something that is sexually transmitted. What kind of message is that to give a 12-year-old girl? Can we not do better than throwing condoms at young boys and throwing the HPV vaccine at young girls? The Waterford and Lismore bishop added that he has seen the devastation after a relationship breakdown. He said, young lives are being destroyed due to sexual relationships. Surely we can do something better for our young people. The article goes on to say up to 30,000 adolescent girls are due to get this vaccine this month in Ireland. In recent months, the uptake rates have fallen to 50% as a result of opposition from a number of groups. These groups claim that hundreds of girls who received the vaccine are suffering from long-term health effects, but these claims have not been supported by any scientific study. That's what Catherine Devine, of the non-celestial writing ability, wrote. Not being supported by any scientific study, said Catherine Devine. What a bullshitter. What studies have been done? What inquiry has been called for the families of the girls who have been devastated by this vaccine? None. She goes on to write that Paul Connors, National Director of Communications at the HSE, no relation to Blackie Connors, he said that Bishop Cullinan's comments are unacceptable and outdated. Many of the comments made by Bishop Fonsy Cullinan in his recent media outburst simply fly in the face of best available medical and scientific evidence. And he cited the World Health Organization and leading clinicians from a wide variety of disciplines in Ireland. He claimed that Bishop Cullinan chose certain statistics and repackaged them in a way to suit his particular narrative. He didn't, you see. He's a bishop. He's a man of the cloth. He doesn't sit around making vaccine damage models and rearranging statistics. It seems that Bishop Fonsy Cullinan, just because he's got a pair of eyes and a pair of ears, observed that hundreds of girls are claiming damage. Their mothers are regular women, regular people, asking for questions, and Bishop Cullinan has observed the abuse these women have received. He hasn't sat around fitting pieces of the jigsaw that don't fit together. He hasn't done that. He's just said, what's going on here? The HSE guy went on to criticise him and say, this is 50 years old thinking, Catholic church thinking and all of that garbage. But Bishop Cullinan, to his credit, said he isn't afraid of the backlash. He's not going anywhere. He said the debate needs to be had. He said, the HSC are wonderful people. They're not. Trying to do their best, he said, but many parents don't share their views of the vaccine. The regret group is over 400 concerned parents. The debate needs to be had, said Bishop Fonsy Cullinan. Brilliant. Legend. Decent man for standing up for the women of regret and the girls who are ill and are helpless and don't know where to turn. Good man. Now, my learned colleague, Jean-Anne Crowley, emailed Bishop Fonsy Cullinan and sent him a lovely email, in fact, explaining who she was and why she was interested in this issue, and she recommended he come on this particular programme. And the bishop wrote back to her very promptly, thanked her for the email, very courteous response, and said he'd be interested in speaking to this programme. So I thanked Jean-Anne, brilliant for her to get in touch with the bishop, and I forwarded an email to the bishop just before coming on here. A bit late for today, but I thanked him for responding to Jean-Anne and for considering the programme. So hopefully he'll come on the show maybe early next week, Bishop Fonsy Cullinan. Of course, some of you, particularly obviously in the United States, where's the name coming from, Richie? Fonsy. Well, it's spelled P-H-O-N-S-I-E. P-H-O-N-S-I-E. It isn't Fonsy, as in, hey, Bishop Fonsy Cullinan. He comes across as a lovely man, thoughtful, and fair play to him for sticking up for the beleaguered families of those girls whose lives have been turned upside down since getting the HPV vaccine. Okay? Right. It absolutely pisses me off, you know. It pisses me off that a guy expresses an opinion and straight away, oh, 50 years old church thinking, typical Catholic church. No. The guy is saying, listen, I don't want to be disrespectful by saying the guy either. I'm not a Catholic, but I respect everybody's religions. I always have and I always will do. I'm not being disrespectful calling him a guy. The bishop is saying, there's something going on here. We need to have a debate about it. And of course, he's been called an idiot now by the Irish press. 19 minutes to the top of the hour. In fact, it's 18 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Back to the... and it's short for Alphonsus, by the way. Jean-Anne informs me. A-L-P-H-O-N-S-E-S, Alphonsus. And Fonsy's is short for Alphonsus. I should have known that, but I am thus I didn't know that, Jean-Anne, thank you. So that's where Fonsy's comes from. Good man, and I hope he comes on the programme soon. Back to the EU momentarily. This might make you giggle. The Rothschild investment banker Emmanuel Macron, who now holds the office of President of France, right? Who was groomed by his wife, by the way, when she was his teacher at high school. This isn't pathetic, crass, gutter journalism. This is true. He was. He's the French president. Well, this week he's been calling for deeper political union in the European Union. This is the end game. No sovereign nations, just the United States of Europe. He said it's his big ambition to bring that closer in his time as French president. Now, hilariously, this Rothschild puppet came from nowhere, and nobody in mainstream media is asking anything about that. How did he come from nowhere? He's been speaking to CNN, and rather funnily, he's been speaking to CNN about Hillary Clinton and Donald Chaos Trump and Brexit. Do you want to hear some of Emmanuel Macron speaking to CNN? It's comedy gold, but it's also a festival of lies. Have a listen.
Mrs. Clinton, whom I do respect, is probably due to the fact that the perception of your people was that she was less middle classes candidate than Mr. Trump, which is a big issue. And as I told you, she was pictured, I'm not saying it's true, but she was pictured as a candidate of the elite. And I think if you don't put yourself with an answer to better regulate this globalization and to give more power to middle classes, it's impossible to convince in current democracy. And I think it's more or less the same issue with the Brexit. First of all, David Cameron didn't properly defend the yes and the remain. It was a remain but. And he already lost at the very beginning when he was not clear about his strong willingness. Because when you have all this no in front of you, you have to be a strong believer, not an ambiguous believer of the European idea.
You have to laugh at Macron. Hillary Clinton is not the elite, he said. Insert expletive there. She isn't, but she failed to show it to the electorate. She's a good woman. What a laugh. Then he said that Cameron lost the Brexit argument because Cameron voted for Remain, but... So what Macron wants you to believe there is that Cameron was in favour of remaining in a reformed European Union. And that's why he lost. And of course, Macron isn't in favour of a reformed European Union. They want closer and closer political union, further integration. As he explains to the interviewer, when she next even asks him, how did you manage to win the French election?
Because I know the outcome of this trend. It's war. At the end of the day, it's all about how to fight against each other, and it's all about war. So the big question today is how to rebuild our multilateralism.
So he said, everybody coming out of the European Union means war. And he repeated that again. When countries leave the European Union, it is war. Not political war, not economic war, war. This is garbage. Then he goes on to talk inevitably about climate change and all the rest of it.
So during the past two decades, inequalities increased like crazy. That's a big issue for all our middle classes. And that's the very beginning of this crisis of globalization. But second, we have to deal with climate change, terrorism, migration. All these issues are global issues. So we need multilateralism. We need to be strongly coordinated and to protect our common goals and common values.
Yeah, climate change and terrorism means that we have to have multilateralism, which is a nice way of saying deeper and deeper and deeper political union. An end to sovereignty. The disappearance of sovereign states so that we can have a single voice on climate change and terrorism and everything else. A world army, as David's been talking a lot about lately. The truth, of course, is what he's not telling you is that it's easier once we have a United States of Europe to finish off what we started. Agenda 21, Agenda 30, the Hunger Games Society, the movement of people out of rural areas into super cities in all countries in Europe, and ultimately the disintegration of life as we know it on planet Earth, and the depopulation of millions and millions and millions of people. And we can only achieve that if we have a deeper political union and we have a single parliament in Brussels that every country in Europe must acquiesce to no matter what. Delivered to CNN today with another puppet journalist who didn't ask him a single question. It's 12 minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Live on Thursday, the 28th of September 2017. I will be joined in the second hour of the programme by Paul Craig Roberts, who's had a lot to say, on these issues and much more. Some terrific work, some terrific journalism on Paul's website in the last few days. Looking forward to catching up with him as well. It's been a while since Paul was on. In the meantime, though, another very quick break. When I come back, I'll read some of your tweets and some of your emails.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Right, I had the entire ad break to do what I'm going to do now. I'm a bit of an idiot today, as I explained at the top of the programme with my driving heroics earlier. I wanted to find out, and you could probably help me, in Ireland. Playboy in Ireland. When did Playboy become available in Ireland? I was still in Ireland when it became available in Ireland. Now, Wikipedia, and I get really worried about trusting Wikipedia on everything. It's like Facebook. It's become the go-to place for factual information. It's a bit dangerous. But Wikipedia says 1995 was when Playboy became available in Ireland. I do remember it was in the 90s, but I didn't know if it was late 90s or early 90s. I ask this because there's been a lot of funny jokes and memes today. The Playboy Mansion impresario himself, Hugh Hefner, died aged 91. I was kind of mildly amused today by debates, BBC 24, BBC News 24 even, and Sky News 24 had debates about Hugh Hefner's legacy. And I suppose he's been around a long time, hasn't he? Well, obviously at 91, but he had a history of supporting civil rights campaigners and campaigns over the years. A lot of people, a lot of feminists, and I don't say feminists with gritted teeth or anything. I'm always wary about saying feminists because people automatically assume that in the independent media, particularly shows like this, you've got to hate, you know, or you know, you despise all identitarians. No, I don't. But feminists, you know, had a different opinion of him. But it was very interesting today to see very bright people like Pamela Anderson, whom I've come across several times over the years in interviews on various television programmes, comes across as very bright. Not at all as you might expect for, you know, a blonde playmate, well-endowed actress from Baywatch. You know, we stereotype, we pigeonhole people, and we shouldn't do that. Bright woman, but she had a lot of great things to say about him today. I just found it interesting, you know, the whole thing about whether what he was doing was in any way sexist, whether it was in any way putting women down. But then there was a woman on today who said that she remembered when he put the first black woman on the cover of any magazine, let alone, you know, politics or entertainment, on the Playboy magazine. And it just got me thinking about Ireland and how repressed my country, I suppose, still is when it comes to sexual matters, that you couldn't buy a top shelf magazine in Ireland until the mid to late 90s. And I remember, and anybody who's listening to this in Ireland, particularly football fans. Now, if you're a man or woman in Ireland and you're a football fan and you travelled in the 80s or early 1990s to Manchester, Liverpool, London, Birmingham, Leeds, Glasgow even, to watch football, you will have gone with a shopping list for top shelf magazines, nudie magazines. Are you going to see Liverpool, are you, John, on Saturday? Bring us back a few nudie magazines. It was all very seedy and sordid. That's how repressed we were. And then you would get the nudie magazines and you'd be delighted as a young teenage boy. Delighted with the... I can remember the names of these magazines as well. Fiesta was one. Escort was another. Playboy was a bit tame by comparison in terms of you'd have a playmate in a nude photograph, and then Playboy had sports commentary, didn't it? It had sports commentary and political articles as well as the centrefold, but it was tame by comparison to Fiesta and Escort and these other magazines. But that's how innocent we were. We used to come over, watch United, watch Liverpool, and then go back with a carrier bag full of magazines that you had to hide from your parents. So I'm reliably informed that it was 1995 that the magazine made it to the top shelves even of Irish supermarkets, probably not so much supermarkets, but bookshops anyway. And I can imagine. I don't ever think... I'm not sure I ever bought a copy of Playboy. In Ireland anyway. I don't think I ever did. I've bought adult magazines in the past. I'd be a liar if I said I didn't. But I don't think I ever bought Playboy. But I can imagine when it came out in 1995, men were embarrassed about bringing it to the checkout, to the cash register. I could do hours of programs about sexuality in Ireland and the impact of religion on the expression of sexuality in Ireland. I could do hours on it. In fact, when I made radio programs in Ireland for some years ago, which I've mentioned more than once on the program, we explored this issue of the Irish attitude towards sexual relations. But yeah, 1995, and by that stage, when did Playboy come out? The early 60s, was it? So it had been around a long time before it made it to Ireland. I wonder what the Playmates thought when they realised it was finally being sold in the land of the leprechaun and the land of Guinness, the land of hurling and Gaelic football and great poetry and music. I wonder what they thought. Anyway, speaking of Ireland, this is Aslan, Christy Dignam from Dublin, from Ballya All Clear. By the way, my name is Richie Allen. I hope you're well. Thanks for tuning in to the Richie Allen Show on Thursday, September 28th, 2017. About 5 minutes time, Paul Craig Roberts. Oh, Greatest what-if stories in the history of Irish music, Aslan, Christy Dignam's air on your Richie Allen Show, live right now on davidicke.com, brand spanking new website, looking great. We're on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and we're on richieallen.co.uk. Aslan had it all. In the mid-1980s, every record company in the world wanted to sign them. And Christy Dignam, great man Christy Dignam, was dealing with a serious addiction to heroin at the time, and they kind of missed the international boat, but one of the most brilliant bands, lyrically and musically, ever to come out of Ireland. Aslan, and this is on your Richie Allen Show. Paul Craig Roberts is standing by, will join me in a minute. Just want to share this with you. I saw on Twitter, I don't spend much time on Twitter or Facebook, I just don't. First of all, I'm busy. I keep thinking of the Kim Jong Il puppet in the Team America World Police. Kim Jong Il's puppet. Do you realise how fucking busy I am? I'm busy. I'm double busy. So I don't have any time for it, and I don't like it anyway. I prefer face to face conversations or speaking to somebody over the phone. But I did notice today the actress Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's a very funny woman, very talented woman. She, of course, is known for a number of shows. She's Veep was the most recent very successful programme for her, wasn't it, Veep? But I think she was in The West Wing as well. Seinfeld as well, as far as I know. She's a smart woman, very, very funny. But she's announced that she has breast cancer, which, as she pointed out, 1 in 8 women get it. And she announced this, I suppose, when you're in the public eye and you've got journalists following you around, you've got to make an announcement, I suppose. And I was just thinking today, the last thing in the world I would ever do, because I've never studied any form of medicine, whether it be so-called conventional medicine, whether it be naturopathic medicine, whether it be homeopathic medicine, I don't have a clue. And I would never say to anybody, oh, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't get chemo. You have no business telling people what they should do. Don't tell them what they should do. You know, you can make them aware of, look, there are other things. And I was just wondering, I wonder, will anybody in her immediate circle say to her, some well-known people have had a lot of success with cannabinoid or cannabis oil and have been able to avoid invasive surgery and have been able to avoid amputation because they've used the oil. Not to say that you don't go to the oncologist and prepare yourself for the chemo, because nobody's the right to tell anybody they shouldn't do that. People should make up their own minds. But you wonder, would anybody say to her, listen, you know, have a... Because some high-profile women recently in the UK have been diagnosed with breast cancer and they immediately had the, you know, had their breasts removed. And I thought, look, what the hell do I know, you know? I just thought, wouldn't it have been nice if they could have tried one of these things that there is so much information about now? But anyway, what are you going to do is the question. What are you going to do? I don't know. But yeah, Julia Louise Dreyfus, very funny, very, very funny, very talented woman, very well-known woman, has come out and said, I have breast cancer and I'll be, you know, obviously going through the treatment and all of that. So, you know, I was just musing on that today. I know you'll have an opinion on that. Feel free to share it with me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Shall we scare up our guest this evening? Brilliant guy. We love him. There's no two ways about it. He's one of the best. He's one of the greatest guys that's ever come on this programme. I love having him on. You know him, of course, for his time as the United States Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. He worked under President Reagan. He's also written several best-selling books, brilliant books, which we'll tweet out links to so you can find those books if you haven't read them before. For many years, he's been doing a very rare thing for somebody who walked the corridors that he walked. He tells the truth and he challenges mainstream and establishment thinking on economic issues and geopolitical issues in general. You can read him daily at his website, which is paulcraigroberts.org. There's only a handful of websites we endorse and recommend. I recommend paulcraigroberts.org. And he's in Virginia. Let's welcome him back to the show. Paul, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
Hey, fine, Richie. It's always fun to talk to you.
It's always fun to talk to you. And there's never a dull moment, is there? Whenever we chat, there's a lot going on. And I did say to our audience today on social media that you always have thought-provoking articles on your website, written by you. You're also very generous in that you publish articles by other learned men and women from various, you know, parts of the establishment, former Secret Service people, former intelligence agency people as well, of course. There's a lot we could talk about today. And I'm really interested in your thoughts on identity politics and the Holocaust. But I want to first ask you about this huge media storm at the moment concerning Donald Trump tweeting aggressively at the men of the various American football teams, the Cowboys and other teams, because of their decision not to acknowledge the national anthem because they've got issues around the treatment of African Americans. What do you think of this? Is this a distraction story, or is it a notable story worth paying attention to, Paul?
Well, Richie, I think it's very notable and it's very dangerous. It's hard to know what's going on because we don't really have a media in the United States. We have they're called prostitutes, and they really function as a propaganda ministry. And but according to the media, for whatever it's worth, a large majority of Americans support Trump on this. And so why is this dangerous? Well, first of all, these Americans are trying to deny the NFL players their First Amendment rights. For example, advertisers are pulling their adverts from the pro football games that are televised. Some of these teams play in football stadiums that are built with public subsidies. And so politicians are introducing bills to pull these subsidies away from the stadiums. And it's all because of the protests. Now, if you think about it, you shouldn't have taxpayers subsidizing billionaire football team owners. But that didn't occur to the politicians. It's quite all right. They can have the subsidies as long as they stand up for the anthem. So there's a huge disconnect there. And the people who are making such a fuss about the protest are actually the ones who are attacking the Constitution.
Right.
They are attacking the First Amendment rights of the players. So that's dangerous that that's not recognized. No one has pointed that out. But let's get on to the real danger. Here's the real danger. All of this, what they're doing is whipping up a hyper-patriotism, super form of patriotism. You've got football fans out there burning their football tickets that they paid hundreds of dollars for, burning their football shirts, doing all kinds of stuff that only hurts them. So you can see the patriotism is irrational. Well, what's going to happen to this patriotism? As I see it, you've got the military security complex, the neoconservatives who want world hegemony, and the Israel lobby who wants us to attack Iran. They're all sitting there licking their chops. They're going to take all this patriotism. They're going to turn it against Russia, Iran, China, and North Korea. And so it's going to make it easier for the military security complex and the neoconservatives to continue these aggressive military moves against Russia and China, this aggressive talk about attacking Iran, aggressive talk about more sanctions. And so this hyper-patriotism plays into the hands of the warmongers. And that's why I think it's extremely dangerous. I don't think this ever would have occurred to the NFL players, the black ones. I think if they had thought about it and said, hey, you know, let's don't do this because it'll play into the hands of the warmongers, they wouldn't have done it. But it's not something that occurs to ordinary people, you know, the consequence of their actions. So the unintended consequence, I think, of the protests, of the counter-protests, is to whip up all of this American patriotism that creates an agenda for the military security complex, the neoconservatives, and the Israel lobby. So that's the way I see it. It's potentially disastrous.
It's a brilliant article. Can I just say, I think what you've done in your piece on this, patriotism is a two-edged sword, by the way, which is on paulcraigroberts.org. You've very, very cleverly defined the difference between a very positive feeling of national sovereignty and of being proud to be from your country and wanting your elected officials to do the right thing for your country in terms of jobs and in terms of, you know, promoting the best interests of the people of the country. You've conflated that with what I think you see as a sort of jingoism, which is what we're seeing with this NFL thing, which is really not nationalism at all. I think that's what you've brilliantly done there. And I think you're not being unkind when you say that the ordinary man and woman maybe can't see it. It's not because they're not intelligent. It's because of the prostitutes you described there, not defining the difference between the sovereignty that we need to protect our borders, to protect jobs for, you know, our own citizens, and this kind of crazy patriotism. I think that's what you were getting at, Paul. It's a terrific piece, and it's incredible that you've connected the dots and linked that to things like, you know, what's happening in North Korea, Russia, of course, and this idea that the Iran nuclear deal should be torn up. So you reckon, and of course that segues into your article about the US, you know, being a warmonger police state. They're stirring people up into a kind of a frenzy where they will, you know, be quite happy to go for war with Russia, war with North Korea. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what's happening. When you get the population into a patriotic frenzy, you know, then they're ready to attack anything. In other words, it doesn't help the military security complex, the Israel lobby, or the neoconservatives to keep all of this patriotism focused on black football players. That doesn't lead them anywhere. But that's a way to create this sort of feeling, this frame of mind in the public, that they're all now hyper-patriotic, so now they can direct this anger toward Iran.
Yeah.
They can tear up the agreement. They can talk about bombing Iran. They will pass bills to arm Ukraine. All of the kinds of pressures on Russia and China and Iran will mount. And there's a limit to how much of this Russia and China can accept, or else they're just so hedged in, so surrounded with missiles bases and everything, that despite their power, they're helpless. So at some point, they'll have to react or just be too late for them. And so that's the danger. That's the danger in this. The Congress will now have to show how patriotic it is. And patriotism in America always has to do with the military, the flag. And so we're going to see, and Trump found out that he is not permitted to reduce tensions with Russia because it threatens the military security complex's huge budget and power. And so he has fallen into the role of cheerleader for how tough America is. They're even talking about they're going to attack Venezuela.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So this is Trump's role now. He's comfortable being the tough guy, and this is the tough guy role they will let him play. They won't let him play the other tough guy role he talked about during the presidential campaign, you know, bringing the jobs home, making peace with Russia. This was really tough talk for American. That's off limits. He's learned that. That's what all the investigations, all the fake Russian hacking story is about. It's all to hem him in, tame him, make him realize that he's got to get on board with the powerful interest groups that rule. And so that's what he's done. Well, now he's sort of a belligerent type anyhow, and now the belligerence fits with the neoconservative agenda of American unilateralism, American hegemony over the world. It fits with the military security complex needing more and more money, always more money. And they need wars because the weapons they produce have to be used up. Otherwise, warehouses just get full of them and full of them and full of them. And somebody says, well, why do we need any more? So we've been at war for 16 years. This costs trillions of dollars for no effect except their profits. And, of course, clearing out countries that are in the way of Israel's expansion. So that's what's going on, and I think this was happening before we had this great boost in super patriotism. But now we got all these super patriots running around. They're cutting off their own nose to spite their own face. I mean, what sense does it make to burn up $400 or $500 worth of football tickets?
It's insane.
These people don't have any money to start with. They've saved all their year to buy these tickets. And now they're showing how much they hate the players for not standing up for the anthem. What does it matter? And not only that, they're cutting off their favorite form of entertainment. That's what they do. They live for this football season.
Their release, basically. It's their release.
Yeah, that's right. And so they're going to all be frustrated. That's going to make them more angry. See, they're going to get so angry, they're going to say, my God, did I really burn up $500 worth of football tickets? Gosh, did I really burn up that NFL shirt for the New Orleans Patriots? That's when they were the national champions. And good heavens, and they get so angry. The anger isn't going to go on themselves, but the media is going to shift it to Iran, to Russia, to China, to North Korea. And all of these have explosive connotations.
You've explained this, by the way. Our guest is Paul Craig Roberts this hour. It's paulcraigroberts.org. I don't need to tell you any more about Paul. You know all about him already. Go to his website. You get into this in your article about identity politics, and it's incredible because we've been doing a lot on this program about identity politics with various men and women who've written books about it and the dangers of it, and, you know, how insular it is and what happens to people, you know, devolving their or deriving their points of view from the groups they identify with, and how detrimental that is to serious debate. And we can talk about that in a minute, Paul. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. You're the guest. But I'd like to just go somewhere I didn't really intend on going. But you mentioned Venezuela, and our Prime Minister here in the United Kingdom has dropped Venezuela's name into several conversations as well lately. And French President Emmanuel Macron has been talking about Venezuela. And I don't want to dwell too much on it because it's your time, and I know there are other areas we want to get into this hour. I wouldn't define myself as anything, Paul. I suppose before I became a little bit more self-aware, I probably would have described myself as, you know, left-wing or as a socialist before I understood the, you know, the real meanings of those terms. I'm not anything now. You know, I don't like to identify as anything. I try to be honest about my opinions, and I'm happy for people to shoot my opinions down. And when people provide me with evidence, I say, all right, I was wrong, and I can go a different way. I understand the situation. This is what I understand, and you might disagree with this. Hopefully you will. It'll be good for debate. But Maduro and Chavez, I don't see them as 100% the angels of, you know, the socialist movement and the angels of poor people that some people would have them portrayed. But I don't see them as bad people either. I think they made mistakes, Chavez and Maduro. But I think ultimately they're genuine in their desire to get globalists and foreign massive corporations out of their countries, to take control of their assets again, to do the best they can. I'm not saying they're perfect. And I think what's happened is, you know, the enemies of what they're trying to do, the globalists using their private armies and all of that, are making it difficult for them. And a lot of the unrest, not all of it, in these countries is promoted from outside. I'm not saying Maduro is an angel, but that's how I kind of see Venezuela. How do you see it, Paul?
Well, I'm probably more partial toward Maduro and Chavez than you are.
Yeah, well, good. Right.
You know, the history of the United States with Central and South America, for that matter, Mexico, has always been one of total domination. The United States has never permitted a democratic reformist government in those countries to stay in office. Many countries have tried over and over, particularly in Central America. I don't know how many governments in Honduras, for example, which is in Central America, you know, that's sort of that isthmus before you get to South America.
Yeah.
Three or four. We've overthrown. The people elect a leader who will represent them. But the trouble is, the American corporations are down there, and with the previous corrupt government, the American corporations own everything. So the people have nothing, and so they elect a leader And he says, okay, now we've got to have different rules here. We've got to have this so that the people who live here benefit from the resources the country has. And the minute he says that, Washington targets him. He becomes a target, and we remove him. You know, that so many books have written, described it in detail. You know, we had the fellow who wrote the book what was it? He was a corporate hitman. You had General Smedley Butler.
Yes.
Who wrote the bullet war, the book, a pamphlet, War is a Racket. He said that he spent his career saving American investments from the native peoples in South America, or saving some lousy investment of the bank that he served to impose American colonialism on South America. That's what his job was. He said that. So we've always done it. Anytime it looks, what happens? See, what happens in these countries, there are these small Spanish elites, and they rule for us. So we let them participate a bit in all the gravy. We don't take it all. We leave a little for them and nothing for anybody else. So we rule through them. Well, what happens? They lose control from time to time, and you get a leader who actually represents the people, who's not a member of the small Spanish elite, who's actually an indigenous person.
Yes.
And they get overthrown. See, they overthrew Chavez. It was a CIA plot with the Spanish elite. We overthrew him. What year was that? Was that 2002?
Yes, you're right, 2002.
We overthrew him, but before we could kill him, the people came in the streets, the military revolted, and we had to turn him loose. And he went back into office. Well, what he should have done is arrested all of those people, tried them for treason, and executed them, and he would have been rid of that class. But he didn't. And so now the class is back, and it's doing the same thing to Maduro. Of course, we're behind it because they're our agent. I mean, you know, Washington, me. It's the oligarchy in Washington. That's who's behind it. But the Spanish elites always are treasonous to their own people because they serve Washington. The same thing is going on in Ecuador, in Bolivia. Remember, Obama got rid of the woman who was president in Argentina. What was her name? They didn't like her because she was a reformer.
Not Kirchner, no.
I can't remember what her name was. It's just within the last two or three years, and they stuck in some right-wing freak.
Yeah, Cristina Kirchner, Fernandez de Kirchner. It was Kirchner.
That's right. We got rid of her, some kind of faked-up false charges that depended on supremacy of American law over Argentine law. I mean, it was ridiculous. We did the same thing to the woman in Brazil. What was her name?
Dilma Rousseff, yeah. Rousseff. You're challenging me tonight, Mr. Roberts. You're really sticking it to me with these questions. If I don't know the answers, I'm in serious trouble.
Remember either, you know.
No, you're right. Dilma Rousseff, yeah.
Okay, we got rid of her. She got framed up and removed, and all the crooks that we've always relied on got back in power. Wherever they get a reformist government that tries to have a more equitable type of system, we step in and overthrow it.
When they want to nationalize what's rightfully there. So here's the question on that. Thanks for saying that about Maduro, because that's what I believe. I really do. Like I said, I think Chavez made mistakes. I think you identified a key mistake.
The mistakes he made
were genuine.
Was not arresting those people. See, the trouble is, people like Chavez and Maduro, I mean, we demonize them, but they just have too much humanity. They won't. The Spanish elite were about to kill him, but it never occurred to him to arrest them and put them on trial and kill them.
Because of the consequences of that, because he didn't want to start off
The consequences of not doing it is now they're going to get rid of Maduro.
You're right, 100%, but I think Chavez probably thought the people will think it's more of the same if I start executing people. I think you're 100% right, Paul.
No, I don't think so, because what they did was an act of treason.
Yeah.
And treason gets punished the same way everywhere, England, the United States, Canada. So we can't sit on our high horse about it. You know, they're in Washington, they're screaming. They want Julian Assange dead. They want Snowden dead. So this is an act of treason committed against Chavez. It was a coup that was stopped by the military in Venezuela and by the people going into the streets. Well, he should have said, okay, you play this game, all right. You've committed treason. You're under arrest. You'll have a fair trial. They were clearly guilty. There's no way they could have gotten off unless Washington sent in special forces to rescue them, and they would have been legally executed under the rules of democracy, and Venezuela would be rid of this scum.
They'd be better off today. Can I ask you a quick question on this? This is really, really vital stuff. Paul Craig Roberts is our guest. It's so timely you talking to me about this tonight. I'll tell you why. You are probably aware of it because you keep your eyes open as to what's happening in the UK, but you might not be. At the Labour Party National Conference in the last 2 days, now the Labour Party are likely to form the next government in this country, either in a majority, but more likely in a coalition government. They're likely. Jeremy Corbyn, you know all about him. Now his best friend and his right-hand man, John McDonnell, who would be the UK Chancellor if Labour wins. I know you know this, Paul. I'm just saying this for our listeners' benefit. If Labour wins the election, John McDonnell will be in control of the economy. He said a startling thing for a mainstream politician. And I had to give him credit for it, Paul. And I despise politicians and political parties equally. He said, and I quote, or I paraphrase, he said, if Labour wins, because we want to nationalise energy, we want to nationalise the Royal Mail, and we want to nationalise transport, the market is going to try to destroy us in the early days. They're going to try and bring us down by having a run on the pound. And I thought, Paul, he came perilously close to telling people the real conspiracy. You know, who's really pulling the strings? The globalists and the banks and the financiers. I thought it was an extraordinary thing for him to say. If we win, they're going to come after us because they don't want us to nationalise everything. They're going to destroy the market, crash the economy. What do you think of him saying that? He's right, I suppose.
He's completely correct. I mean, this is what they did to Trump, isn't it? They didn't crash the economy, but they brought all the forces of threatened indictment as a Russian agent down on his head. He couldn't even control his own government, his own security agencies. So, yes, the possible chancellor for the Labour Party said is absolutely right. And I doubt they'll be able to do any of that because they won't go far enough. And not only that, but they're all half corrupted themselves by money. And politics today needs money. And they all know that. And you'd have to go much further. First thing you have to do is nationalize the banks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you would probably have to slap on exchange controls to prevent Washington from destroying your currency. So, because Washington is aligned with the money interest, and any kind of socialist or nationalization program is totally unacceptable to Washington. So, you know, it would take really tough people. It would take a real Labour Party, which I don't think England has anymore. I don't think the Labour Party really is Labour Party. I mean, look, any Labour Party that can put Tony Blair in office has no claim whatsoever to being a representative of the people or of labor. So I don't think there is a Labour Party. It's certainly not like it used to be.
Tony Benn, I think the Labour Party died with Tony Benn when Tony Benn passed away.
Probably did, yeah.
Because he was absolutely genuine. Like yourself, Paul. Paul Craig Roberts is on the line, the great Paul Craig Roberts, live from his home this Thursday. It's in the mid-afternoons there where Paul is. Go to paulcraigroberts.org. Please, if you haven't done before, bookmark Paul's site, because on a daily basis, well-written, thought-provoking, challenging, completely the opposite of mainstream media garbage, articles on Paul's website. And you know, you and I have spoken on this programme many times. You've been talking to national television, media and radio for years, and more years than you care to remember. And I'm sure you've often talked about how things have become so partisan, how much hate there is, how much spite there is. And that's a very simplistic way of putting it. What we've seen is a kind of a descent into personal identity politics. And there's an excellent piece on your website this week about identity politics and what it means and how destructive it is. We think it's one of the most serious issues, Paul. We think that it's one of the biggest social shifts that we've seen in a long, long time. This narcissism, this emotional-driven, you know, ideology, whatever your ideology is, and facts and reason and conversation and dialogue just go out the window. Have you noticed this over a period of years, or has it been a kind of a slow creeping thing? How has it worked?
Well, it originated with, a German Jewish Marxist, cultural Marxism. And I think because they gave up on the working class taking on the capitalists. So the new approach to dividing society was no longer the workers versus the bourgeoisie. It was to separate the elements of society according to race, gender, sexual preference, and to isolate each of these elements of society within itself, that it had nothing in common with other groups. And for a long time, it was just an intellectual thing. But the American left, I don't know what happened in Europe or England, but the American left today, the liberal progressive left, no longer supports the working class. They despite the working class, in Hillary Clinton's terms, the working class are the Trump deplorables. They are sexist, racist, homophobic, gun nuts who are oppressors of women, transgendered, bisexual, homosexual, and minorities. And so the heterosexual white working class male now has the position in left-wing ideology that the capitalists used to have, or the bourgeois used to have. And all of the other groups, the feminists, the transgender, the bisexuals, and so on, they are all now the oppressed.
Victims, yeah.
They're the victims. So the cultural Marxists then essentially got rid of Marx, you know, the notion of workers of the world unite. See, Marx was unifying the workers. And of course, they're black workers, they're Hispanic workers, they're female workers, they're homosexual workers. But the working class is now splintered because they no longer think of themselves that way. If you're homosexual, you think yourself as a homosexual. If you're transgendered, you think yourself as a transgendered. If you're a feminist, then you think of yourself as a feminist. And so it's this isolation Yet each of these isolated groups is united in being oppressed by the white male working class. So, and this is the reason they hate Trump, because the way they see it, Trump was elected by that part of the country that had manufacturing and industries. All these jobs were sent to Asia, and these people haven't got anything to do, and they're revolting, and they elected Trump, and these are the bad people. These are the deplorables. And so this is the situation. This is why they're attacking what they call Civil War statues.
Which is lunacy, Paul, isn't it?
Lunacy.
Trying to erase history, whatever the history was, good or bad.
It's not so much they're erasing it, they're rewriting
it. Rewriting it, yeah. Better put, yeah.
The story now is that, first of all, it wasn't a civil war. A civil war is when two sides fight for control of the government. The South didn't fight for the control of Washington. It just said, hey, we're leaving. We got our own country now. Goodbye. It wasn't a civil war. The war was caused by the Northern invasion of the South. The South was fighting because they got invaded.
Yes, historically, absolutely spot on.
So, but the way they've rewritten history is, oh, the South went to war in order to spread slavery over the country. And they did this because whites hate blacks, and they got pleasure out of mistreating all these blacks they paid fortunes for. In other words, they paid huge sums of money for blacks so they could mistreat them. And they wanted to spread this into the North. And so you can see this is identity politics written history. It has no factual basis whatsoever, but everybody believes it. And if you say, wait a minute, this is not so, you're defending slavery. So this is the level of intelligence and awareness, and it's all a product of the teaching of identity politics.
Everything is black and yeah.
They have to rewrite the history, Richie, or it doesn't fit the story of identity politics.
And the victimhood that you alluded to a couple of minutes ago.
The victimhood. So all the history gets rewritten.
You know, you just identified something really important as well, how it kind of teaches that everything, you know, can be dealt with in absolutes. Everything is black and white. So if you make a statement about something, you are jumped on, and somebody says, oh, so you hate blacks then? You're like, no, I didn't. I just gave an opinion on a certain aspect of history. It doesn't mean hate blacks.
I try not to have opinions.
You can't have opinions.
I try just to give what the facts are. But you see, people in America, especially the young, they can't tell the difference between a fact and an opinion. They don't know the difference. I'm not pulling your leg.
It's a post-fact world now, Paul.
It's a post-fact world. It's an emotion. And if you explain something, you just give them an explanation, they see the explanation as a defense of whatever you're explaining. So you can't really even explain anything because they don't understand what an explanation is. If I give them an explanation of something, they think I'm defending what I'm explaining. Otherwise, why am I explaining it?
And they excommunicate people who disagree with them. This is staggering to me because I grew up arguing with people. I'm an Irish guy. We argue all the time, but I've never had a political argument with anybody in my life that resulted in me excommunicating that person. We're seeing the levels of narcissism brought on by this identity politics.
I don't think it's narcissism.
Do you not think so?
No, it's something worse. It's sort of new. Identity politics has to be understood in its own terms. We can't use old concepts to understand it.
You think it goes beyond narcissism, basically? It goes way beyond it.
It's not self-worship. It's not what it is. It's a new form of Marxism in the sense that there's oppressors and victims. But it's a form that does that by breaking up the working class into disparate elements and putting them at each other's throats. Look, last week or so, somebody in England, one of my readers, sent me a news report that there had been a fist fight in Hyde Park between a transgendered group and a feminist group.
Yeah.
And they were screaming at each other and fighting and hitting and knocked some woman down. And so what is this? And one of the groups had a name I'd never even heard of before. So even the groups that are victims of the white male are in fistfights in Hyde Park with each other, not with the white males, but with each other. So it's a form of reduction of the person to a sexual preference.
Doesn't
it? Skin color, to a gender. And so it busts up the population so there can't be any resistance to the rulers. They don't even know who's persecuting them. It's not the bankers. It's not the military security complex. It's not the Israel lobby. It's not the politicians. It's the transgendered are now being persecuted by the feminist or vice versa. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
I do, yeah.
The population becomes so busted up into tiny little splinters that how can you do anything to pull it together, to give it a political agenda, to try to get the country back into control of the people, because the people are opposed to one another.
And it destroys debate. And not only does it destroy debate, it almost criminalizes debate, and it promotes self-censorship, the most insidious form of censorship, where people are scared to say things. And we're talking again about the white working class male. Because of the Twitter attacks and the social media attacks, and because he's demonized for, you know, who he is or she is, they then become reluctant to speak their mind and say their piece. Isn't that right? So you have self-censorship.
Yes. That's right. It's very few of them have a mind to speak. I mean, the ones that do now, if they do, they're going to pay a price. They'll get fired, you know, like the guy at Google. All he said was, look, men and women have different traits, and men are better in some kind of jobs, women are better in other kind of jobs. That's because their traits fit the jobs. They fired him.
He's a misogynist.
This was a gender insensitive. It's true.
It doesn't matter if it's true or not.
But it doesn't matter that it's true. It's
doesn't
gender
matter.
Insensitive. Now, just the other day, Philip Giraldi, a former CIA officer, got fired by the American Conservative, allegedly a conservative magazine, simply for pointing out that it was the Israel lobby driving Washington toward war with Iran. And they said, oh, it's impermissible to say anything about Israel. And they fired him. And this is the conservative publication.
And he's telling the truth.
It doesn't matter if it's true. Israel doesn't like it. And you can't say it. So all this stuff, you know, I may have said before, last spring, I was talking to a professor from Purdue University, one of our big research universities, a major professor there in the business school. And he said he got called into the dean's office and was given a dressing down because he used the word girls in class.
Jesus Christ.
And girls is offensive to feminists. You can't use the word girl. Well, how in the hell would a guy 50, 60 years old know that?
But what did they want to be called? It's madness, Paul. It's
women
madness.
With a Y. It's women with a Y. W-O-M.
Y-N.
N. W-M-Y-N.
That's not even a word, Paul.
Well, it's one they've made. They've created it.
So it's a new gender then.
But look,
Christ.
We can talk forever about these
forever,
silly aspects of it. But the serious part is that the working class no longer exists. It's busted up into all these subgroups and subgroups of subgroups. Apparently now there are different kinds of feminists and different kinds of transgendered, and they don't get along. So it's not just the white male is catching it. They're now giving it to each other.
It's utterly insane.
Let me make this point here, because we started with the notion of this patriotism in Trump.
We did.
This is the one good thing about patriotism. It, one thing that does pull people together, but it seems to be mainly white males that it's pulling together. Although not all of these NFL teams with their black players have made these protests. A lot of the teams haven't made the protest, including the blacks. But patriotism seems to be in the arena of identity politics the only unifying force. And yet, it's the force that the military security complex, the neoconservatives, the Israel lobby can use to bring on more wars and more threats of wars. So this is, you know, the double-edged sword. How do you unify people in a milieu of identity politics except by patriotism? But then if you have a aggressive warmonger government like the United States has, then that patriotism becomes one of their tools. And that's where I think it's going. I think it'll all be directed at, as I said, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. There's going to be more crises. At some point, the Chinese and the Russians will simply have to understand that they're being surrounded, that they are losing every advantage, every chance of national survival, and they're going to have to do something.
That just about brings us to the end of our time today. Sadly, it's flown by. It always flies by when you come on the programme, Paul. That's incredibly important and insightful stuff and very thought-provoking. I want to mention again Paul's website, and there are links to his books, and I've tweeted those out, and I'll put them on Facebook as well, is paulcraigroberts.org. Always a pleasure. Thanks for making time for us, Paul. I know you get 1,000 requests like this a week, but you always come on our program when we ask. We really appreciate it. Thanks for your insights.
Well, may I encourage my English readers to keep sending me all this information of these strange feminist transgender groups fighting each other. This is really illuminating, and I want to be able to keep up with it.
Absolutely, so right.
I appreciate hearing this type of feedback from readers.
Paul, thanks again. Well, people need only go to your website and contact Paul through his website there, paulcraigroberts.org, with any of this information. Sounds like there might be a book in the offing, Paul. We'll wait and see. I hope there is. Sincere thanks again. Enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend, and we'll talk again real soon.
I look forward to it, Richie.
Cheers,
so
Paul. Great stuff. The brilliant Paul Craig Roberts, former US Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, live from Virginia. Brilliant to have Paul on. And it's paulcraigroberts.org. That's his website. Bookmark it and do help out with these stories. When you do come across them in the British press, send them on to Paul. He'll be glad to receive them, as he said there. Just about it, really. Not much left in the programme today. Thanks for your tweets on that and on everything else. Dara Mason Field has been listening to yesterday's podcast and has sent me a nice tweet. Dara, thanks for listening as well. Faisal tweets, I'm an Anglo-Swiss, Sri Lankan, anarcho-cynicist violinist. Time to start a society and assert me rights, says Faisal. Why not? That's an interesting thing Paul said there about these groups calling themselves women. W-O-M-Y-N. That's a new one to me. I'll have to look that up. Just sending a message there very quickly. W-O-M-Y-N. Imagine being brought into an office by your head teacher. You are a teacher. And your head teacher, he or she, says to you, you're being reprimanded because you used the word girls when addressing a group of girls. Right. Sure, 'tis only mad, Ted. Sure, 'tis only mad. Tell you what I'm going to do. I've said a lot tonight. So is my guest. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to love you and leave you. Thanks for listening to the programme today. Really appreciate it. Big thanks to Paul Craig Roberts. Check out paulcraigroberts.org. Congratulations to all the team at davidicke.com for their brilliant rejuvenation of davidicke.com, the website. Do bookmark the website. Hayden Hewitt will be live at 10 p.m. on liveleak.com with a brand new show called Trigger Warning. That's Hayden Hewitt live at 10 p.m. with a Trigger Warning. Brilliant guy is Hayden. I'll talk to you on Sunday morning at 11 for Sunday View. Enjoy your weekend. I've been Richie Allen. Bye now. Thanks for listening. See you soon. We'll be fine.